Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. With me today is J.V. Venable, Colonel J.V. Venable. He is a graduate of the Air Force Fighter Weapons School. It's the Top Gun School. If you saw the movie Top Gun at some point, if you're old enough like me and you saw the movie Top Gun, that's the Navy version of this school. This is the Air Force version of the school. And he led the Thunderbirds, and as well as 1,100 American airmen flying 95 aircraft in combat. He's a really interesting guy. He's written this fabulous book, Breaking the Trust Barrier, How Leaders Close the Gaps for High Performance. And JV joins us today to talk with us about trust, how you develop trust, how you are able to reclaim your trust if you've lost it, or if someone's lost it from you, that you're able to regain trust in them. JV, welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast.
Peter, it's great to be here.
Let's start with how you define trust.
Yeah, trust is an interesting animal. A lot of people will throw out some rhetoric with regard to trust, but the way I look at it is trust is your willingness to put yourself at risk or your organization at risk on the belief that someone else would come through on a task, in a role, or with a mission. People who express trust in terms that don't involve risk are just really giving you an expression. They're not saying anything about what I believe the heart and soul of trust is, which it revolves around the word risk.
Interesting. And does it have to be a risk for them, or could it just be a risk for you? So let's say I'm taking a risk and I'm relying on you to follow through on something so that my risk pans out. That's one kind of risk. The other is I'm trusting that you will take a risk, the person who's fulfilling the trust equation need to be at risk as well?
It's all perspective with regard to the level of trust. By and large, trust is two-way. I can trust you, but if you don't trust me in this give-and-take paradigm, then the likelihood of you coming through for me is lower. So when we talk about trust in terms of the Thunderbirds, it kind of gives you a great picture of it. People, when they were flying fighters in the Air Force, would fly about 3 to 4 feet apart in formation. But when we flew, we did things in a very dynamic environment. We would do loops and rolls and maneuver the airplanes very aggressively while you were flying. Very close to each other, on the order of 18 inches away at times. And in order to get that close to a vehicle moving 450 miles an hour, 300 feet off the ground, you have to put your trust in the person in front of you in order to close that gap and then stay there. And that is absolutely two-way, because before I put you in a position behind me, I've got to trust you as well. And this is where that dynamic comes into play.
How fast are the planes moving at that point?
Well, we vary the speeds in the demonstration all the way up to just slightly below Mach 1 at 0.94 Mach, which is around 550 miles an hour at sea level. And then we go all the way down to about 150 miles an hour on the top of loops and the likes.
So you and I would be flying, let's say we were on this team, you and I would be flying somewhere between 150 and 500 miles an hour with our wings a foot and a half apart from each other.
At times where I expected you to stay a foot and a half, absolutely. When the most violent of the maneuvering, and when I say that, the most dynamic of the rolling and the looping, we were back at around 2 to 3 feet. But for the maneuvers where they were very compressed, that was when we were at our lowest, and about 450 knots is where we'd be flying.
So 2 to 3 feet when you wanted a margin of error. And then right. 1.5 feet. So that puts things in perspective. You know, there was a guest that I was talking with about trust who was talking about trust in terms of I need to trust that you're going to do absolutely the best that you can to make something happen. But you're talking about a very different level of trust. I don't care if you're doing the best that you can. If we're flying two aircraft a foot and a half away at 500 miles an hour, I need to trust that the best you can will actually translate into a seamless performance, that flawless performance, that the trust is only valid. I have to trust that you will not fail.
Absolutely. Think about yourself in traffic, rush hour traffic, tooling down the road at 65 miles an hour and being a car length behind someone in front of you. And you at that distance are able to check the periphery of you, the cars to the left and right of you, but you've got to do it very fleetingly. Your cross check has got to be very fast. Think about closing in to a foot and a half away from the car in front of you where you can no longer actually see their bumper. There, it's absolutely every ounce of concentration that you've got. And you're trusting that that car is going to stay at speed for the duration of your time at that distance. And this is absolutely mutual.
And it's actually very similar when I'm biking and I'm drafting off of other people. Biking, it's the same thing. We're just a few inches apart. And I think there's two things. One is that I need to trust that that person is going to sort of hold the line. And I also have to trust, though, that if they're going to make a change, that they will communicate that to me. So it's not necessarily that they're unvarying, but it's that their communication skills reflect and they're capable enough as communicators that if they're going to make a change, they're thinking of me, not just of themselves.
It's a great example, Peter. If you're in trail with another bike and they choose not to communicate with you, what do you do? What happens when you're tucked right next to them and they make a move and you weren't expecting it? What do you do?
Well, you know, you make your move in order to preserve yourself.
Right. And you will back away until you can get passing a room off to one side or another. And that's the way trust works, is when it's mutual, you can hold that distance and both parties benefit from the relationship in this drafting context. But as soon as you as the leader do something that I'm not expecting, that you don't convey to me, that's out of line with the integrity that you've given me, that's when I back away from you with regard to trust and I back away into the best position of loyalty. That's the best you can expect out of me.
That's interesting. And that's you're making rational decisions there. You're protecting yourself and you're protecting all the bikers behind you.
Right.
Right. Who are relying on you not making that jerky move.
Right. And even at loyalty, I put myself at some level of proximity to you to where if you slammed on your brakes or you went down on your bike, I might not be able to miss the collision. I might be part of the wreckage right along with you. When you do it a second time, when you make a move without conveying that to me a second time, I'll back away even further, back to commitment. And I'll only stay there as long as I can as it takes me to pass you and find another draft worth following.
So, you know, it's interesting because there's two ways. Again, there's two sides of this trust thing, right? So on the one side, the question might be, how do we get people to trust us, right? That's one piece of it. And I'm curious of your answer. I imagine there's, you know, at a very basic level, we fulfill our commitments, meaning we do what we say we're going to do reliably, and then you build trust. Are there other ways of getting people to trust us?
I'm not sure. I can speak to that directly. But what you did say was this two-way aspect of trust. It is absolutely that. And as I'm developing commitment with you, Peter, and getting you to close the gap from commitment into loyalty, I'm watching you and you're watching me. And we're trying to get that complete picture of how reliable you are, how steady you're going to be, what's your skill set? Can you follow my turns without clipping my tire as we go around the corner in that biking sense? And when you start that closure process, I've got my eye on you just like you've got your eye on me. And we go from commitment to loyalty, and you're going to stay at loyalty. You're going to stay, give yourself some wiggle room until you can absolutely trust me. And then once you close that gap to trust, we are both at risk. And that's why this definition of trust puts it in both camps. It's both ways.
So you've alluded to it a couple of times, this process of commitment to loyalty to trust. Can you just take us through that a little bit explicitly so that people understand, you know, what you mean? What is that process of arriving at trust?
Yeah, when you come into an organization, the new hire that you bring on board is looking at you to see how you commit to them while you're looking at them to see how they commit to you. But the first move is in your step as the boss, and you're the one who's going to give them the technical footing they need, the social footing that they need to integrate in the organization, and overall traction within the team in order for them to do what you need them to do in a committed form. And this is where that basis of trust is laid. If you don't build commitment, you cannot go or expect to go to loyalty and bring that person into being loyal to you. As they close into loyalty, you've got a couple of other things that are going on. And that's basically me looking at how I can further your momentum as a trailer. And I, in the normal lifespan, you have five different areas that I can further: your faith, your family, your friends, your health, and your job. Even when we're talking about a working environment, I'm going to look at each one of those areas and see how I can further your life, Peter. Which one of those areas is most passionate to you and which one I can give you the biggest leg up on? And as soon as I make that move, you're going to respond in kind in the sense that you're going to see my loyalty and you'll close into loyalty.
So help me again understand the difference between, because it feels a little subtle to me, but maybe not. I think there's something I may not be understanding, the difference between commitment and loyalty. So when I show my commitment to you, what am I doing?
You're giving me your demonstrated will to perform for the organization. So commitment is your demonstrated will to deliver for an individual and organization.
And as the leader, what am I doing?
I'm showing you my demonstrated will to commit to you and your well-being, your footing in the organization.
So I'm basically saying to you, if you start working for me, or let's just say that you're the leader, if I start working for you, what I'm looking for trust is for you to care not just about what I'm able to create for the organization, not just about the sort of organizational outcomes we're able to produce together, but that you're committing to me as a person,
right?
And that you're going to support me as a person to both be effective in the organization and also personally to help me in my career, to help me, like, you're making a commitment to my success, not just in the organization, but in general. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Commitment gives you the footing to accelerate within the organization. And then when I'm pulling you into loyalty, I'm actually accelerating you in your life. And as soon as I figure out which of the paradigms, which of these five areas of your life is the most important, when I am able to assist you in accelerating there, you're going to close on me because you want to. I give you this room. So back to the concept of drafting, if I can, Peter. This whole thought process that you know well in the biking world is really evident to people when they watch NASCAR. What they don't get when they watch NASCAR is this mutual benefit of drafting. When two cars run close together, nose to tail, they can actually sustain a speed that's faster than either car could achieve on its own, even momentarily. And that's a phenomenal idea. And the way it works is the lead car knocks down the wall of air for both cars. And the trailer is close enough to the leader's bumper where it begins to take the drag off of the leader's car and shift it onto its own, allowing both to move down the track with a power of about 2, with a drag coefficient of slightly less than 2. And that allows them to accelerate as they go down the track. Well, the concept, while it's mutually beneficial, it's a little bit lopsided at first, because as that lead car plows down the track, its movement knocks down that wall of air and it creates a void, a draft, a kind of a vacuum that allows that trail car to close easily even as it moves forward. But the lead car, funny enough, doesn't gain any relief of its drag until that trailer has closed the distance, the gaps between them, to within one car length. And that's where trust begins. When we get that person to close from two car lengths back, which is commitment, back to one car length back, which is loyalty, and inside of that distance, we're both at risk because of that proximity, and you start pulling the drag off of my car, allowing us both to accelerate.
So let me ask you a question related to organizations, right? Which is all of the scenarios that you're talking about, the biking scenario, the car scenario, the plane scenario. There's an underlying motivation for trust on both sides, which is to say that if you are 18 inches away from my wing and you actually clip my wing, we're both going down.
Right.
And so there's an inherent tendency for me to trust because I know that your interests are 100% aligned with my interests, right? That if one of us messes up, we both die. And what I'm wondering about is in organizations, that's not always true. And I have to trust you in a way that says, I have to trust that you're going to take care of my interests even though in some situations it may be against your interests. You might have to give away some of your bonus in order to give some of that bonus to me. I have to trust that you're going to take care of me, even though you could do probably just fine or maybe even better without me. How do we create that kind of trust? It almost feels like the bar for creating that trust is higher because, you know, our interests are not always aligned.
Yeah, so that's why building that foundation is the most important side. You made an assumption right up front that everybody's interests are aligned once you get into trust. So you've assumed commitment and loyalty, but that building block process is really critical because that's where that person is going to shed their conceived notions about you, these biases that they have about other people. See, Peter, you look like somebody I knew before, and I couldn't trust that guy. How do I change my thought process just on your looks or the way you sound or the way you walk? There's something about you that telepaths something to me that says, I see it. I've seen it before. I don't know what it is about this guy, but I don't trust him now. This building of commitment, that foundation, takes a while to do. And what that you're doing is rewriting code for that person to retrust, now to trust you as opposed to that memory they've got. As they close from commitment into loyalty, they're going to see more of you than they saw before because they're closer. It's kind of like being in traffic and being able to see how the person in front of you slams their hand on the steering wheel. You can see every gesture once you're close. And they get to know you and they get to see how you follow your boss, what your interactions are with your family. You pick up the phone, you're talking to your son, and you hang up the phone and you slam it down and you go, that idiot. After you've talked nicely to him on the phone, that is this conveyance of how you are going to be with me. I get to see you in ways I would have never seen at distance before. That will allow me to trust you if you hang up the phone and say, I love that boy. I know he's going to do the right thing. But it'll give me a proxy vote that says, when you slam that phone down, when you're on the other end of the line and you're talking to me and you hang up the phone, I'll assume you're doing the same thing with me.
Right. It's a revealing moment. What happens in that moment if you hang up the phone and you don't say that idiot, but you don't actually know whether they're going to do the right thing or not? I mean, that's the thing about trust, is that you're hoping that they're going to do the right thing. If you really know them well, you may trust that they're going to do the right thing. But there's some people that you want to trust, but you don't actually know that, in fact, whether they do the right thing or not will inform you as to whether you can trust them. How do you respond in that situation?
When you're in a room with your colleagues and you're talking to your son on the phone and you hang up the phone and then you say, I know that boy will get it. I love him. They're going to get a picture of you of how you deal with your son when he's a long way away. When you hang up the phone after you've been nice to him and you slam it down and your colleagues watch you say, that idiot, I know he's going to mess this up. You have just conveyed to your peers exactly what they can expect out of you when they're on the other end of the line. They know no longer to trust you in that sense. And this is how this commitment to loyalty, to closing in the trust, it's all encompassing. It's the whole you people will be watching.
So this leads me to my sort of deep question about this work, which I think is important. And I think what you're saying is absolutely 100% right. And when I hear you go down the list of, you know, like in terms of developing loyalty, you want to think about those categories and can you help them in family, you know, figure out what's important to them and help them in that. And I'm not saying it is this, but there's something that feels kind of manipulative there. Like that, like what I'm hearing you say is when you hang up the phone, yeah, think about your colleagues, but in reality, what kind of a person are you? Like, are you the person, like, how do you become the person who says, God, I love that boy and I hope he makes the right choice? You may not know for sure that he's going to make the right choice, but your love for him shows. And it's kind of like the shift, the mark between being the kind of person who does care about the people around them versus simply doing the things that one does in order to create trust. Is my question making sense?
It absolutely does. So I've got an example in the book I'll share with you, and this is very personal, though it sounds like it's very public. Flying the demonstration is my first demonstration in front of 100,000 people, clear day. We were at sea level. The jets were performing really well. There's no reason for me to miss an entry airspeed. I got to the point on the ground where I was supposed to start a loop, and I looked down, and I was 5 knots below the airspeed I was supposed to be entering it. I was at 420 knots, and it was a clear day, and we had lots of thrust at sea level. I knew I could have made it work. I knew I could have. But the team had had a very public mishap about a year and a half prior, and it was all over the same thing. This whole deal about starting on parameters, never below minimum airspeed. And I got to that point, and I knew I could have made it. And Peter, I said to myself, I know I can't. And I went through, and I took a very public embarrassment. I took my formation, as opposed to doing a loop, I took it straight through. We reset, we flew around in a big circle, and we came over and we hit the entry point again, and we started the loop again. When we got on the ground and we went through the tapes, everybody on the team was looking at it and going, what happened? And I go, I didn't hit my entry airspeed. And I put the tape in and I showed it and I said, you guys know I could have made it. You guys know I could have made this loop at that airspeed. But I know that if I had started that process right now, I could no longer trust me. And that's why you can have faith in what you've got on the point. And we went through it. It was an error on my part, but this is how I develop that patience. And it's through failures. It's not the times when your son on the other side of the phone does exactly what you want to do, and it's that loving moment where you can hang up the phone and goes, boy, I'm so proud of him. It's when he wrecks the car. And when he gets out and he calls you and he's in a frantic and you calm him down and everybody hears it, and then as you're hanging up the phone, you look at him and you go, I love that boy. I know he's going to be okay. And that is when you have made a big move for yourself and your family. Your integrity matches your actions with your stated values. And that's when it starts to gel.
And then I guess in that moment, if you find that you're not trusting him, you have to do the work, it's sounding like, to really get to a point of trusting him. Meaning you have to, I would imagine one way to do this is to start working with him on small risks that he can fulfill in order to rebuild the trust, in a sense. Because the most important thing about that moment, I think, is that it's sincere, right? That you hang up the phone and you go, I know this boy is going to get it right. And you're not just saying that in order to convey a trusting persona to the people around you, but you're because that's who you are, because that's who they want to follow. Right. And that's who they want to trust. And so it seems like, you know, using some of this methodology, again, going back to saying, all right, well, how do I convey my commitment to him? How do I then move that to loyalty and really listen to my son and support him in ways? And this would be the same for an employee. It would be the same for a colleague. You know, listen to them in ways where I might be able to support them in things that are important to them and maybe feel supported by them and take my own risks so that I'm willing to be vulnerable. The story that you gave about entering with the airspeed, that I'm willing to like be vulnerable to them and go, look, I messed up here and I saw it and I'm admitting to it. And showing that vulnerability ends up creating an opportunity for you to be supported by them, which generates a different level of trust. And so my takeaway from this, too, is that there are these methods, these methodologies around developing, you know, communicating commitment and developing loyalty and getting into trust. And there's the underlying truth of who you are and how you walk in the world, that has to be created in a genuine and an authentic way by fulfilling your commitments and by having the people around you fulfilling their commitments.
Yeah, Peter, the parenting example is a great one. So parents, by and large, are committed. And almost all of them are loyal to their kids to a fault, you know, to the very end. This trust thing, you watch your child grow from 1 to 2, the sweetest thing in the world, to 6 to 7, never thought about loving their father or you loving your son or daughter more. 12, 13, 14, very interesting time. And some children stay true and they continue to do what they tell you they're going to do and you can trust them. But as soon as they have a failure of trust, what do you do as a parent? You always are loyal. You will always be committed and loyal to your children. But this trust thing takes a while to rebuild in them and in you. And it goes back to something you said earlier. It's the little things. Can I trust you with taking out the trash every day? Can I trust you with doing the chores? Can I trust you to be honest when you tell me you did your homework? And then slowly you build back up into giving them the keys to the car and moving forward with big, big elements of trust.
That's a great example. And I guess it's important. It helps me understand the trust thing too, because you may lose trust in someone without losing loyalty. And that from the place of loyalty, you give them little things to do. You begin to sort of test the trust in little, completely manageable, doable tasks that then allows them to succeed and for you to rebuild from loyalty to trust.
Absolutely. So politics is another great area. If you have a political person that you're following and they do something that betrays your trust, you may not trust them, but you may always stay loyal to your Democratic or to your Republican candidate, if that makes sense. And this is where this dynamic becomes very volatile, because you can elect someone, if you're not careful, that you don't trust, because you're loyal. So this is where that dynamic gets very hard to manage.
Well, yeah, it feels like that might be a little bit of a different thing, because you're loyal to an institution as opposed to trusting a person. But when I think about commitment to loyalty to trust, I think that's a useful construct of a ladder that, but I imagine that to be useful, it needs to apply to either, you know, a person or an institution. But if you start being loyal to an institution, that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be loyal to an individual. In fact, I think if you're very loyal to the institution, it means that you probably will be disloyal to individuals, depending on who the institution supports. But as a construct, I think that's very helpful to say you start with a commitment. You then show loyalty and ask for loyalty, and from there, then you build trust. And it's the construct that you have in the book, Breaking the Trust Barrier, How Leaders Close the Gaps for High Performance. I have JV Venable with me. JV, thank you so much for being on the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I think your book and this idea around trust is super important.
Peter, thank you. Enjoyed it very much.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.